Part 3, The Deeper Recesses of the Iceberg. In this portion of the talk, we will be looking at the deeper recesses of the iceberg. As a reminder, the portion of the iceberg we see when approaching the technological iceberg, as I mentioned at the beginning of the talk, includes a variety of topics that are regularly drawing public conversation, social media and bullying, poor communication skills, lack of personal interaction, not eating meals together, texting and driving, video addictions, dopamine addictions, idle time and distraction, privacy issues, and pornography addiction, just to name a few. I want to reiterate that these topics are not insignificant. However, there are deeper issues that I believe are often overlooked. I would like to consider two. The first is philosophical in nature. The second is specifically relates to our Orthodox life. The first deeper portion of the iceberg I would like to consider is the relationship between technology and epistemology. Epistemology is the study of knowledge. How do we know that we know? How do we know what we know? How do we justify what we believe to be true as true? For our purposes today, we can ask ourselves, what is the primary vehicle of truth in our culture? Is it speech? Is it what is written? Is it what is on a video? Is it tied to the number of views on a video or likes on a post? Further, does the medium by which an idea is communicated impact its truth? Do we believe something is more true if it is written down than if it is spoken? Do we believe something is more true if a person presenting the information is well kept and presentable than disorganized in their physical presentation? Do we believe something is more true if there is research study that goes along with the statement? Research shows, therefore it must be true. What if we find what we see emotionally engaging or it makes us happy? Does this make it more true to us than something that is dry or unengaging? The point here is a simple one. And again, Neil Postman says it best. Quote, truth does not and never has come unadorned. It must appear in its proper clothing or it is not acknowledged, which is a way of saying that the truth is a kind of cultural prejudice. Of course, here I want to be clear. I'm not talking about ultimate truth, who is Jesus Christ. I'm talking about more mundane truths that we encounter every day that serve as authorities in developing our habits of mind and our assumptions regarding what is true or not true. Just reflect on how people choose to get their news information today and the basis upon which they believe it to be more authoritative. Big data is authoritative for us today. A Google search is authoritative today. How people physically appear is authoritative for us. If you attach numbers or a certain type of visual presentation to a communication, the communication becomes more authoritative. We have a cultural bias to believe it to be more true. Along with the mediums of today also comes a deep skepticism as to whether anything we read, see, or hear is true. Skepticism in our culture is a serious problem, and it stunts the growth of our youth and their ability to commit themselves to anything, including the gospel of Jesus Christ. A second consideration within the deeper recesses of the iceberg is technology and distraction. Our culture seeks solutions beyond the walls of the heart of man. If we could only build this, make this, create this, all of our problems would be solved. As I quoted earlier, the Lord teaches us that the kingdom of God is within us. We must be able to attend to the movements of our heart. We must find inner stillness in order to come to find the inner depths that exist within us, and there to find the grace of God. Traditionally, the Jesus Prayer is a means to find this life of interior prayer. We live in a world of continual distractions. I was recently on a late-night airplane flight. It was about 12:30 a.m., and the flight was scheduled to land around 1 a.m. You would think everyone would be resting on the plane. Instead, I could only count two people who did not have their screen turned on in front of them, watching some kind of movie or show. In addition, there were a myriad of power lines in each row from people charging various devices. These distractions direct our attention from the fact that there is more to our lives than being amused. We live in a fragmented society where we can pick up a device with the intention of doing one thing and end up doing five other things on it that we never intended to do. All the while we are sitting at the table eating in a restaurant with family or friends, while several different televisions in the restaurant play different shows and music is playing in the background as well. Of course, our friends and family may not even notice we are distracted, because they also are distracted on their own devices. We are a distracted culture. Yet the Orthodox life calls us to be watchful over our thoughts, to not allow us to get lost in our heads, but to bring our hearts into our minds. Our minds into our hearts. We should be attentive to our thoughts and monitor the movements of our heart. St. Paul tells us we should pray without ceasing. The Orthodox life seeks attention and integration, not distraction and fragmentation. One could argue that modern technologies such as a smartphone seek to run us in the opposite direction than what the Orthodox life calls us to. How do we in our schools build attention and watchfulness? How do we create the time and space to cultivate the inner life when the world demands something different? I think we as Orthodox educators need to reflect deeply on this question. No doubt, we will stand apart from the world on this question, which also means our approach to education will also look quite different. I would like to end this section by reading you a blog post by Nicholas Carr. He's written a number of quality works on technology that I believe captures the spirit of our age and relationship to technology. He writes, "I like to know where things stand. I like to know how things are progressing. I signed up for UPS My Choice and FedEx Delivery Manager and USPS Informed Delivery. I know when a package has been shipped to me, where it is every moment as it hops across the country toward me, the projected window of its ultimate delivery, the fact of its delivery. I know when there are exceptions. I know when the weather has turned inclement. I know the hubs and I know the spokes. When I myself require carriage, I order a car through Uber or Lyft. And in an instant, I know my driver's name, what he looks like, the model and color of the vehicle he is driving, and his rating. Vladislav, white Toyota Camry 4.8. I see where he is on the map, how many minutes I must wait for his arrival. Sometimes his progress stalls, and my wait time increases by a minute. And this is painful to me. I don't want to be surprised. I prefer suffocation to surprise. I give Vladislav 5 stars not because he deserves more than 4 stars, but because I would like my life to be a series of 5-star experiences. I am standing in line in a building, waiting to get a matter taken care of, and in front of me is a sign requesting that I rate how I'm feeling by pressing one of the 3 emoji buttons. There's a smiling face and there's a frowning face. And between the two is a face with an expression of complete affectlessness. I choose the button in the middle and immediately I feel my face go blank. I like the fact that I can now check my credit rating without affecting my credit rating. I'm no fan of the uncertainty principle. I've come to realize that I learn more about other people by Googling them than by meeting them and talking with them. When a friend posts a new photo on Instagram, I give a lot of thought as to whether or not I should like it. These choices have effects on people, and they have ramifications for how people will judge me and my own offerings in the future. The likes I give or withhold say something about me as well as about the object or experience being rated. The generation of metadata should never be taken lightly. Metadata is a kind of agony. Everything that happens to me is time-stamped. My life is a series of transactions recorded in official ledgers. I'm a clerk. I'm a bureaucrat. I'm always on the job. I know all the details. I know what just happened. And I know what happens next. Only the present escapes me." What we hear in this narrative by Nicholas Carr is how technology is fundamentally ideological. Technology delivers us a way of life and a set of relations among people. Technology changes our cognitive habits, our neurological wiring, our definitions of community, and the ways in which we approach and conceive history. Technology sets the terms of our expectations for education, how students are able to process information, and what they find, quote, interesting. Technology sets who we call a friend, the nature of a conversation, how families stay, quote, connected. And the amazing thing about technology is it does it without force. We invite technology into our lives to change it. If you will, the revolution comes silently.